Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is episode 267 of Red Sox Beat, presented by CLNS. This is Josh Lewin, and thank you for hanging with us here. Recording this on a Monday, you're probably listening to it on a Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't know what you do and how you live your life. I'm not going to judge. But anyway, I mention that because now that we're actually playing baseball for reals, as the kids say, the standings do tend to change. So I'm just trying to throw it out there that as of this recording, they're 6-9 and in fourth place, and nobody's super excited about that. But they've won 3 out of 4. This was after going 3-8 to start the year. They're 3-1 since then. When they get up there to 5 runs or more, they tend to win. And Mitch Moreland has 6 home runs and only 31 ABs as we're recording this right now. That's Fred Lynn stuff right there to start a season. And Mitchie actually did this to start last season too. It's just nobody noticed because the team got out 2-8. But the pitching's getting a little better, although there's already been so much turnover. We'll get into a lot of that as we go forward. Here's what we are doing on Red Sox Beat number 267 in the weirdest quote-unquote year there's ever been. I keep saying it's not a regular season anyway. It's quite an irregular season, and I think we all have to be at peace with that. Chad Jennings will come by and talk to us kind of point by point about what is going on with the Red Sox, what he's hearing. He's closer to being on the ground than I am right now. So a wonderful writer, good guy, Chad Jennings, will take us through what he's hearing. And for those of you wondering, are we ever going to see Bobby Dalbec? I don't know if we're going to see him this year. Remember, he had to fight through the COVID protocol back around a month ago. They don't really need him quite yet as of this taping. But we might see Bobby, and he's a fascinating kid. So we'll kind of tip back towards our spring training interviews, dip into that, and let you hear what he sounds like, just in case we never actually see him play here in 2020. So, again, the Red Sox are winning more than they lost this past week. The Yankees are starting to falter a little bit. They don't look like the perfect team anymore. Stanton is injured. Their pitching has issues. Yankees and Rays were chirping at each other, yelling at each other all weekend. That was kind of fun to see from afar. Also interesting, of course, to see the A's and the Astros go at it. Of course, Ramon Laureano, Alex Cintron, all of that. So we have sports. I think that's the key takeaway here. Sports keep coming back. So does your chance to bet on sports with our exclusive wagering partner, betonline.ag. MLB has, of course, restarted. It's in full swing. A lot of prop bets you can get in on. And as sports hopefully start to return more and more, remember, BetOnline has sat down with Eddie George, Robert Horry, Harold Reynolds, a lot of cool people getting their opinions on what it's like playing without fans, what they've called Fandemic here. Go to visit betonline.ag today. Now you can check out all of the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up, take advantage of all the welcome back stuff they've got going on. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Again, it's BetOnline, and we would very much like you to continue with them because they're continuing with us. Makes the world go round. So, Chad Jennings, going to join us. Should we just dip right in? It's not a perfectly recorded interview because we're in the times of COVID, so I know this isn't going to sound perfect, but for what it's worth, here we go.
Chad Jennings joins us, and we're so glad he's doing that through the magic, not of Zoom, but some wacky record a call thing that I've got going on my phone. We're all making adjustments here, obviously, Chad, and first of all, thanks for stopping by again. People love your insight. How are you adjusting? I mean, we're looking at games that have no fans, there are reporters there all spread out. You're looking down at cardboard cutouts, but nothing much more than that. How are you finding the 2020 season other than bizarre?
Yeah, it's an adjustment on two ends, really. You know, my wife and I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, so that's sort of the first challenge is just figuring out physically how to be available to do my job. And then once I'm there, you know, whether I'm at the ballpark or if I'm, you know, just sitting in my basement on a Zoom call or whatever, watching the games on the road on TV, it's trying to figure out then how do you write about this season? You know, the fact that they just hit 15 games and we're a quarter of the way through the season, I mean, that snuck up on me. You know, I was kind of starting to write something about the struggles of the offense, and, you know, you just write 15 games, and then it just sort of at some point while I'm writing it, I thought, oh, my God, they're a fourth of the way through the year. You know, it's really odd. And you know, and I think you can see it, too, you know, in some of the evaluation that's happening both from those of us sort of watching from the outside and those inside. You know, I mean, 15 games into the season, you know, I looked it up the other day that 15 games in the season last year, Mookie Betts was hitting like 230. And, you know, that's Mookie Betts. Now, he obviously turned it around, had a very good season, but if Mookie Betts were hitting 230 a quarter of the way through the year this year, that would be a huge story. You know, and you're seeing that with a lot of guys, with J.D. Martinez, Rafael Devers, some guys who are off to slow starts. It's kind of like you're stuck between two worlds, which is the reality of this season, where you go, okay, that slow start is a real problem because that slow start is now a quarter, you know, we're a quarter of the way through the year. But also, it's still baseball. It's still 15 games of baseball. So how much do you really just go, oh, okay, J.D. Martinez is probably not going to be good for the next 45 because his first 15 were bad, right? I mean, you don't know. It's a hard thing to know really what to make of all of this because it's all just so completely different from anything we're used to.
Yeah, and I think we're all getting used to this conversion rate now too, right? I mean, every game is worth 2.7 games. So, I mean, every at-bat basically is worth 2.7 at-bats. And I look at Charlie Blackmon hitting 440. And I'm thinking, well, you know, he's at Coors Field. The weather is warm. That team is winning. And he's only got 44 more games to go. You know, I mean, so your mind starts playing little tricks on you. So that's a good one, Charlie Blackmon. Let me get you to what you were writing about recently on The Athletic, which is there's not a lot of Charlie Blackmon going on with the Red Sox. In fact, as you and I are speaking, your team batting average is .236. They're not hitting much with men on base, runners in scoring position, all of that. We're looking at what Fangraphs deems as high leverage situations. They're hitting .143 without an extra base hit. When you put it into that silo, only the Royals and Phillies are down there with them. So what's going on other than, I mean, like you kind of suggested, it's only 15, 16, 17 games, but, Benintendi, Martinez, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see it where the team is so split, you know? I mean, it's really half the roster has been pretty good. I mean, Vasquez has been good. Xander's been pretty good. A lot of Xander's good numbers really come from that one four-hit game. But even since then, he's been good. He's walked a lot. He's gotten on base a lot. Kevin Pillar has been good in this sort of part-time role that he's in. Mitch Moreland has been terrific. So there are guys who are making it work. But you look at, I think with everyone else, you wonder how much just, again, it's hard to say whether it's an excuse for it, because every time they talk about like, oh, I can't watch video or something, that feels like an excuse, but it also maybe it's the reality for some of these guys. I mean, watching video of every at bat is what made J.D. Martinez go from a guy who was released at the end of spring training to a legitimate superstar in the game. He's a guy who just studies and studies and studies. And so now to this season take that away from him where he's not allowed to watch video of his at-bat, it seems like that's really had a huge effect on him. And I thought the opposite would happen, honestly. When I found out they were not going to have video in games, I thought, oh, this will show these guys that they're probably overthinking it. Do you know what I mean? I thought, well, you don't need to watch every little thing. Just go out there and hit. And I bet this will show them that, you know, you're probably overdoing it, overthinking it a little bit. Just go out and hit. Be a hitter and just go. And for some guys, you know, Christian Vasquez is a big video guy who really modernized his swing last year. His numbers have stayed pretty good this year, even without video. But JD is a different hitter. I mean, he just, in every way, whether it's just the sort of standard numbers that we're used to looking at. He hasn't had an RBI since opening day. I mean, that's insane. But also stuff like his whiff rate, his hard hit rate, all of these things are going the wrong direction. So it's all there. I mean, he's just a different hitter right now. And the only thing you can look at and say is what changed for him really is his whole routine is off because he can't go make those little minor tweaks. But then with other guys, you know, Jackie Bradley, Tim Hyer said it the other day that he started the year going really good and he was kind of going off the field a little bit, feeding some shifts. And now they've just started pitching him in and it's a matter of he has to make that adjustment. But again, shortened season. So when he has one good week and then one bad week, it all gets amplified, you know, and it's like he has to make those adjustments. Taking a week to make the adjustment is that's forever, you know. I mean, that's
right.
That's basically taking a month to make the adjustment. Ben and Cindy right now is literally might be the worst hitter in baseball by the numbers. I mean, he has been unbelievably bad, two hits all season. That's unthinkable. And with something like that, you wonder how much that sort of the intangible of a 60 game season where he's being asked to lead off and he obviously wants it, right? He wants to be that table setter. He wants to be able to sort of help out and play his role. But if you get off to a slow start, which Benintendi's been prone to, I mean, in his career, it's been very common for him to have a bad first week or so. And then he kind of gets some traction and he gets it going. But in this situation, you wonder, does Benintendi have a bad week? And he knows that bad week is basically the equivalent of almost three bad weeks. Then does he start to press a little bit and he can't have the same conversations that he normally would with JD or with Hires or with whoever else to kind of help get him out of it? And does it all snowball because of the environment in which he's playing, right? Like he's used to coming off to a bad start, having a bad first week, and then he gets it going. Is it harder to then get it going because of everything else that's going on?
I think you bring up a great point. It reminds me of there's an old Peanuts cartoon, where Charlie Brown is trying to work through something and Lucy says, don't come to me with your stupid problems. And, you know, I mean, normally everybody goes to JD. He's hitting 346, so he's happy to help everybody else. Well, right now he's slugging 346. So it's gotta be, don't come to me with your stupid problems.
Because he can't
figure it out himself. And it was staggering, Chad. I mean, to see Benintendi in the fourth inning the other day getting pinch hit for by Kevin Pillar. I mean, you know, that's such desperate time, call for desperate measures kind of stuff. But then you're right. You look at the calendar and realize, you know, there's 40 games left in the season because of what 2020 is.
Yeah, and that is magnified, right? That one, even though you say, oh, gosh, it's the fourth inning, the 15th game of the season, 14th game of the season, whatever it was, that matters. I mean, they need that win so much more. And look, Ron Renke's been around the game for so long, and he is just a genuinely nice man who, you know, in a normal circumstance, I don't think there's any way that's embarrassing for Benintendi, right, to be pulled in that situation. I mean, it is a show of we just don't believe you can get the hit in this situation. That's a tough message to send 2 weeks into the year. And you know Renicki's well aware of it. I mean, Renicki was not a guy who his career was, you know, as kind of an up and down part-time player. I think he is very aware of what it feels like to be in those situations. So for a guy like that, for a manager like that to make that move shows you that he knows that's the decision he has to make right now. I mean, there's no way he feels good making that move and having to tell Benintendi, I don't believe in you in this situation. But it had reached a point, even after only 2 weeks, it had reached a point where he had to do it because of the way everything is so magnified.
So Ron Renicki, who obviously, look, he's trying to prove himself in an impossible situation. And the one thing that you heard a lot early is that he just didn't believe enough in Mitch, right? I mean, Mitch Moreland had another great day Sunday. You know, he walked off Thomas Hatch. They win it 5-3, his second homer of the game. So it becomes very apparent to everybody who's been around Mitch. And look, I've known Mitch since he came up with the Rangers back in 2010, I guess it was. I get it. He's always kind of underrated, overlooked. He's not the sexiest player when it comes to big stats. He can't stay healthy, whatever. But, another monster start, and people are like, boy, if you just would have believed in Mitch from game one, I get it. But it's kind of a two-pronged thing for you. But how is Ron Renicke doing, and can Mitch keep this up? Well, let's take those two things kind of point by point.
Yeah, well, I think you can see that Ron is changing the way he's doing it, right? I mean, this was all about, showing that, sort of having a plan and sticking to it. But now we're seeing already after 2 weeks, I mean, Ryan Weber's been sent down. Andrew Benintendi's getting pinch hit for in the middle of the game. He is just, what was it, Sunday night when he, was talking about Moreland, he also left him in to face a lefty late in the game, showing some faith in him there, and also knowing, planning ahead, going, okay, I'm going to need Moreland later in the game, and then Mitch ends up hitting the walk-off. So I do think Ron is adjusting from his own, what his style would be in a normal year. I mean, I think that Ron would be more of a patient guy, but we've seen it, and then, gosh, even earlier in the year, very early in the year, when they took Jonathan Lucroy off the roster to add an extra pitcher. I mean, Lucroy is a Renicke guy. That's part of the reason he's here, is because Ron knows him from their time together in Milwaukee. So I think that Ron is, you can argue whether it's working or not, but I do think that he's adjusting and trying to change some of the way that he does things to fit within this season and within these particular challenges. But it's also, what can you do? Like, there's only so much a manager can do when Benintendi, Devers, and J.D. Martinez are hitting the way that they are. And when the rotation is basically Nathan Eovaldi, Martin Perez, and then God knows who's next. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know exactly how much of this is, there's only so much Renicke can control, but I think that he's trying to. And also, to the Red Sox, great credit, they've stayed healthy. I mean, they have not really had any injury issues so far. What sounds like a kind of a minor ankle issue with Devers right now, but otherwise, staying healthy, both in terms of just the normal baseball injuries and also free of COVID since summer camp opened. They haven't had anybody test positive again. I think that's a good sign. As for Moreland, the other thing he's running up against is, the track record that he has for getting hurt. I think Renicke is understandably nervous about that. It's common for Mitch to have to miss some time, whether it, sometimes it may just be 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes it's a month. Well, now in this season, that's too much time to miss, So I do think there's some extra concern there of, if we do lose this guy for a little bit and he has another one of those little nagging injuries, he really is sort of carrying the team right now, and they've got to do what they can to avoid that. But you wonder how long can they continue to play it safe like that? You understand why they're a little bit cautious with Mitch, but at some point, if he still is the guy who's driving in all the runs, they're just going to have to play him and hope it works.
Great stuff with Chad Jennings. We've got him for just a few more minutes. We've talked a lot of hitting. I know you're about to start writing about the pitching. Brian Johnson won't be part of it going forward. That news coming down very recently. Your take on that, and also I want to ask you about Nate Eovaldi, who reintroduced the curveball in his last start, was getting swings and misses, were terrific. So Brian Johnson out, Nate Eovaldi healthy and way in. Let me get your take on those two guys.
Yeah, well, Eovaldi's been great. I mean, Eovaldi's always had really good stuff, and it's always been a matter of one, getting enough swings and misses on his fastball. He has a ton of velocity, and he throws a lot of strikes. I mean, for a guy who throws as hard as he does, he throws a ton of strikes. But it's obviously, there's just not a lot of deception there. So that velocity has never been as overwhelming as it should be, and he's never had that go-to secondary pitch. I mean, you've seen him try everything. Curveball, slider, splits. I mean, he's worked with a lot of different stuff to try to give himself something else to get guys off of his velocity. And it seems to be working this year. I mean, again, you look at if Sale were healthy and Eduardo Rodriguez were healthy and Nathan Eovaldi were the number three, they put themselves in a risky spot, obviously, with their pitching depth. But if they'd kept those two guys healthy, this might be a very different thing that we're looking at here, because Eovaldi just has been really good. He's been that sort of strong, more number two, three type that they were hoping they'd have when they signed him. But again, it's the depth issue, and they it's a lot of kind of cross your fingers type guys who are rounding out the rotation right now. Dylan Covey and Zach Godley and the sort of guys that they picked up. And I think as they kept picking up those guys, it had to become obvious to Brian Johnson that they're just trying to find alternatives to him, right? I mean, he is of the in-house guys. Brian Johnson is the one who has a little bit of a track record. He's been in the big leagues. He's started up here. The Red Sox know who he is and what he can do, but they just keep trying to find, they keep finding these retreads that they would rather have. They obviously see something in Dylan Covey or see something in Zach Godley that they like, and they would rather have that over Brian Johnson. So Brian understandably says, look, then just let me go, right? I mean, you can understand the desire to just go, okay, look, just if you don't believe I'm the guy for this, then let me go somewhere else and try it. And I would guess some team will give him a shot. I mean, you know, especially look back at 18. I mean, Brian Johnson was an important part of that team. He wound up
Seattle game. Yeah. I'm sure the Mariners remember him quite well. Yeah.
Huge game for sure. But also just the role that he played. He played that sort of thankless role of spot starter, long man, kind of did a little bit of everything. He's a guy you needed to get through 162. Now, once they got in the playoffs, he wasn't the real impact guy, so he doesn't sit on the playoff roster. But he helped them get there. In 2018, that team was as good as it was, partially because it had a guy like Brian Johnson to help out. So he had some good moments here, but he's never been sort of the standout that I think they'd hoped for when they drafted him. And so now he's out, and, you know, it's kind of who else are you going to figure out? How do you go about figuring out who is the next guy who's ready in Pawtucket when what Pawtucket is just a series of inter-squad games, right? It has to be such an odd thing where you know they're going to need more pitching depth here pretty soon. And so far they've gone with sort of known quantities, right? I mean, it has been Zach Godley. It has been Dylan Covey. It's been the guys who have a track record in the big leagues who they sort of know who they are and what they have. Now, how do you evaluate to figure out, you know, is Kyle Hart ready? Is Tanner Houck pitching well enough against lefties where he's ready? It's a harder way to figure. I mean, that evaluation has to be much, much harder right now because these guys are basically just pitching in spring training workouts, and now you have to figure out what that means.
Yeah, Ryan Weber and Matt Hall were your number three and four starters. They've already been dispatched. I mean, I would say to Pawtucket, and geographically that's true, but it's really just an internment camp is all it is. I mean, it's this whole year just so weird. But, hey, Chad, you're covering it beautifully. I'm looking forward to reading the pitching take that you've got coming in your next piece for The Athletic. Your hitting breakdown earlier this week was fantastic. Thanks again, buddy. Stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. Sounds good. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Chad Jennings of The Athletic, thank you very, very kindly. And you can always check him out, of course, if you subscribe to The Athletic, or we don't have a stake in that, but we just think it's a pretty good website. So going forward here, again, I mentioned, I love the idea, if you're going to have a mediocre season, which it looks like the Red Sox are going to have, start seeing what you got. What else? What can we start looking forward to? Bobby Dalbec, to me, is one of those guys. So maybe if they're out of it in the middle of September or something, we do see some Bobby Dalbec. And, you know, Michael Chavis came up last year and kind of turned everybody's heads. Dalbec could be that guy going forward. We're going to hear from him momentarily. A reminder, this episode is also sponsored by our good friends, our new friends, Scorematrics Sports Trading System. You've heard of Sabermetrics, the analytic model that's propelled the A's to be competitive right all throughout this century. So meet Scorematrics, a system that legendary sports bettor John Todora has used to propel himself into a multi-million dollar lifestyle in record time. Scorematrics applying millions of relevant data points. Is it data or data? John could probably let us know that, but he's got custom proprietary analytic models. They pinpoint winning formulas all through last year's baseball season. Scorematrics produced a 217% gain. And the back-tested results of the members-only alert system based purely off the Scorematrics method. How about it's ridiculous, a 6,796% compounded ROI over the last 4 years? That's ridiculous numbers right there. But very easy to do. You just kind of follow along right on your favorite betting app. And for the first time ever, John's opening up access to this Scorematrix system. So if you want your access, kind of dip your beak here a little bit and see what this is all about. You can start placing some high probability bets by going and finding out what it's all about. Visit sportstradingsystems.com/podcast. That's sportstradingsystems.com/podcast. Actually, a backslash podcast. You guys know how to do that. But that's our new sponsor. We're happy to have him. And it introduces Bobby Dalbec to us now. This is where we wanted to end this podcast here today, because, again, we don't know if we'll actually see him or hear him during the course of this irregular season. But you've probably done enough research on your own to know he was a pitcher in college, a very good one, for a very high-quality program, the Arizona Wildcats. He was a fourth-round pick in 2016, just like Shane Bieber, for example. What a year he's having for the Indians. That's a guy that stayed on the pitching track out of UC Santa Barbara. Dalbec decided to change it up, be a hitter, and that's going okay. Last year, I know he hit only 239, but with a lot of pop. 27 home runs, 73 runs batted in. They put him on the 40-man, and COVID then showed up, so we knew that his season would be paused a little bit this year. Power bat, good defender. You guys want to meet him? Here was the interview with Bobby Dalbec from back in spring training. In terms of your childhood, that's where I always start. When did baseball become the thing as opposed to the other things?
I was born in Seattle, and my parents both love baseball, so we go to Mariners games, quite frequently. So I think when I was about 3 years old, I started loving it and playing in the backyard. We had like a big hedge in the backyard that we would call the Green Monster, funny enough. So I think that's kind of where I haven't really stopped since.
Do you have any pre-implosion of the Kingdome memories, or are you all Safeco Field?
I was all Safeco Field. Yeah. My dad was at that ALDS game against the Yankees. I think my dad was there, yeah.
So for people who don't know, you now go to that stadium on Edgar Martinez Drive. I mean, he's that big of a deal there. Who were your guys growing up?
Edgar, Griffey was a big one, A-Rod, but those two. I was a big fan of Brett Boone back in the day,
right,
too.
The Booney Bat Flip.
Yeah. And I've actually got to talk to him on the phone. He actually, he says Booney Bat Flip, in third person, which is pretty funny.
If Twitter was a thing back then, that would be such the hashtag, right?
Yeah, it
would
have been great. And I've talked to Edgar, too, about hitting. When I was in the Cape Cod League. He's awesome, too. So it's cool to be able to, talk with, a couple of those guys that I grew up looking up to.
I'm glad you brought up the Cape League. I want to ask you about that experience, because that endears you to Red Sox fans, right? If you've already been on the Cape. But, people, they see the movie with Freddie Prinze Jr. They think it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
Is it exactly like that or not really?
It is pretty close, I think. Not as much partying, I don't think, just because host families, we had curfews and all that stuff.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, we had curfews and all that stuff, and none of us were... I wasn't 21 when I was ever in the Cape, so I wasn't really going to bars or anything like that. But, going to the field, doing your own field, and, I would play third base in Orleans, and I would rake third base after the games, There's no ground, you're the grounds crew, so it was pretty cool.
Point of order, what time was the curfew?
I think it was 11:30, 12, something like that.
That's not unfair.
Yeah,
that's
not horrible. Yeah,
okay.
Not horrible, yeah. What
was your host family all about, and do you still stay in touch with them?
Yeah, I talked to them. I had them for 2 years, the Thompson family, Rody and Paige, and they're great. They're house 5 minutes from the 5 minutes walking from the beach. They had a yellow Jeep Wrangler for me to drive, so it was cool. I had my own loft and everything. It was awesome. It was a good experience.
Back to your days in Seattle, were you a Huskies fan growing up? Did you follow college? Did you think about that path?
My mom went to Washington State, so we were kind of Cougar fans. But I moved to Southern California when I was five and lived there. So I was 13 and moved to Denver. And then now I live in Arizona in the offseason.
Right. You get the entire Pac-12 covered.
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah, my dad's in the music business with Atlantic Records, so we've kind of bounced around just because of that. But it's cool.
Last thing is that exact path. I didn't want to kill you on your dad's background, but when people find out that exact fact, I would think everybody wants to be your best friend. I mean, that sounds like the most. What exactly does he do?
He's one of the VPs of promotions with Atlantic Records. So he handles a lot of meet and greet, deals with the radio stations a lot. Whenever bands are in town, he makes sure everything goes right. But he does a lot more than that with them just because he's been with them for so long.
Right.
So,
but he's got to be very social, right? I mean, to do that job.
Yeah, he's a lot more social than I am. He's good with us. I mean, he worked with Shit, he worked with Robert Plant when he was solo back in the day and stuff. You know, I grew up like going to Matchbox 20 concerts and you know, Kid Rock and all that good stuff. So,
do you find that there's a crossover? I mean, you're geeked up to meet Kid Rock. Is he geeked up to meet athletes? Does it work both ways?
I haven't seen Kid Rock forever, so I wouldn't know. But I saw Rob again for the first time in like 8 years. This offseason, he was doing an acoustic show in Phoenix. My dad is in town, so I got to see him again after like 8-9 years. So it was pretty cool being able to see Rob again.
Who are your go-to bands now if you had to beg dad for access?
I don't know. That's tough. Not necessarily as many bands that are with Atlantic Records. You know, I'm a big like classic rock guy. So, you know, last offseason I saw like Elton John and Fleetwood Mac, and, you know, Foo Fighters aren't classic yet. They will be, but, you know, Foo Fighters and Red Hot Chili Peppers and all that stuff. So I go to a lot of concerts.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so, you know, he's been good. That's why, you know, I'm fairly musically inclined. You know, I started teaching myself piano last off season, and then, you know, I'm learning guitar right now, the spring training, so I'm doing guitar instead of piano during the season.
Yeah, well, much easier to travel a guitar than a piano. I'm a keyboard guy, and I used to travel a mini one with the Mets until the equipment guy said cut it out, because guitar is a lot easier.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the Elton John show?
It was awesome.
Right?
He was awesome. It was super cool.
70 whatever, and he's still bringing.
He sounds great. Yeah, he sounded great. You know, still plays the piano like hell, so it's crazy.
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Very last one, I promise, but one quickie baseball thing. Are you, when I ask this of everybody, are you a goal setter? I mean, do you say, okay, this is the year I do, or does it not matter?
I set like little goals, so like daily goals, and then, you know, those kind of end up amounting to more than just trying to chase one big one the whole time. For me, that's just how I work. Obviously, there's, you know, lifelong goals, dreams that are, you know, set from a young age.
But if you're not a major league all-star by 25, that's not going to crush your spirit.
No, I don't really set that kind of stuff. You know, I just want to get a little bit better every day and, you know, keep working on what they think I need to work on and, you know, improve.
Perfect answer. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
Good luck with everything.
Yeah,
thanks. Nice kid, right? Bobby Dalbec. We appreciate his time. And again, his time as a college baseball two-way player really showcased his ability. And, you know, the mid-90s guy with his fastball. If you look at the 2016 College World Series, Arizona went all the way through into the final. And against Oklahoma State in that championship series, Dalbec had an 8-inning game, 1 run. He struck out 12, but they lost that game 1-0. So really interesting guy. I hope he makes it. I'm just glad he spent some time with us here. Glad you guys did the same thing. Always nice to have you for Red Sox Beat. Thanks to Chad Jennings again for stopping by. Welcome our new sponsor as well, the Score Metrics Sports Trading System people. We appreciate them very much. Appreciate you taking the time as always. We'll be back a week from now with more and hopefully some more winning Red Sox baseball. This is Josh Lewin. This is Red Sox Beat from CLNS.